Evening, gentlemen. Grinning like Cheshire cats, all of us. Still in the tournament. Quarterfinals. How does that sound?
Well, kind of what I expected, to be honest. So, like, whilst I'm delighted, it's just kind of proceeding as normal. I'll get excited in a week or so's time. I think that's when I'll really, loose.
You have been kind of pumped up for this for quite some time. I've been the most confident, and now you've been, that confidence has been proven.
Well, I think
so.
So.
Well founded.
Like, I just kind of, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the identity of teams, like kind of what systems they play, kind of their like philosophy and stuff. Teams with philosophies and set ways of playing, they know their best team, they do well. And I mean, we came into the tournament knowing that. I mean, we had some pretty poor friendly results. But again, like all teams who kind of do well in qualifying or tournaments, friendlies are irrelevant. So, I mean, it is kind of expected, really.
Yeah.
The most unexpected thing for me was the England game, where we were poor, and I think Chris Coleman and Sean Roberts made a couple of mistakes there. But I mean, other than that, it's all gone to plan, I think.
Yeah, talking of a lack of philosophy, there's very tempting to discuss last night's England-Iceland result, but we'll probably come to that a bit later. As well as Rich, we got Daniel.
Evening.
And we have Leon in Austria.
Right.
And I'm Russell still. Sort of rotating things, keeping things fresh, as I think Sean Roberts was saying in his press conference. You don't work on fitness now at this stage in a tournament, it's just keeping things fresh. So Gareth and Howell have stood down for the evening. Yeah, the funny thing is, with that Northern Ireland game, at no point during that game, and it sounds a bit cocky and it sounds a bit like after the moment, but at no point was I slightly nervous, even slightly nervous that this wasn't going to go our way.
I won't go that far, but I mean, there wasn't really much drama in the game anyway, to sort of get the emotions running. But no, I see what you mean. It was measured, I suppose, is the best way. And I'm not used to watching Wales manage a game.
Well, that's exactly what they did.
In that way. But Northern Ireland are manageable. Belgium's going to be totally different. As indeed, England, Slovakia and Russia. Because going into the game, on paper, they offer more than Northern Ireland on paper, although maybe not much more in reality. Back to the original point, how are you feeling? I'm over the moon, but I would never say it was expected to see Wales in the quarterfinals. It's never happened before in my lifetime. And we're further ahead in a tournament than Croatia and Spain. So I don't think I ever would have expected that.
And that other lot.
Well, yes.
But I think, I completely agree with what you say about how we managed Northern Ireland. I mean, I think the players just probably accepted it wasn't going to be a game where, like Russia, we could really sort of tear into them, hit them on the break. Yeah. I think they were fully understanding that it would be an ugly game. And I think to an extent, Northern Ireland dragged us down a little bit to their level. And also possibly we haven't got the players to simply blow them out of the water 3 or 4 nil, which not many teams could do.
Well, yeah, no one else has done that.
Exactly.
I think it was just, okay,
trust the system, keep playing, we will probably win this game. And the winner would have come 10 minutes later, it would have come in extra time, and probably we would have beaten them on penalties because we just have better players. I mean, and I think it was to be expected.
But I said in the last one, if you remember, Leon, we were talking before the game, I sort of put forward that sort of theory, if you like, that if the opponent scores early, or the longer it goes 0-0, then we begin to labour a little bit. Against Northern Ireland, I think we kind of dealt with that. We didn't have a great first half.
No.
They were creating more of the chances, if you could call them chances.
Their half chances.
Yeah. Largely from set piece, which was to be expected. And we just found a way. And I think it was when Johnny Williams came on primarily. Bale went wider, he went down the right, went down the left, he was stretching the defence, got round the back. And really within, 10 minutes of that substitution, we're ahead. And as soon as we were going to get ahead, I thought they're going to have to come at us and we will just begin to pick them off and just make use of the space. And as soon as they'd emptied the bench of pretty much attackers, saying Washington came on, McGinn came on, I think it was another one, McGinnis came on, all forwards, They completely lost shape. They lost their pattern, and from that point on, we were actually more comfortable the more attackers they sent on.
Yes.
There was more space in the middle. I thought Stephen Davis had a great game for them. I got a lot of time for him, but apart from that, didn't feel feel threatened, really. A lot of endeavour on their part, which again was to be expected. But yeah, no, I'm worried as well.
I think essentially Northern Ireland hit their level, possibly exceeded their level. They weren't going to go further in the tournament. They just simply didn't have enough. They didn't have enough, even comparing it to Greece in 2000 and when they won.
2004.
Yeah, 2004. They didn't have that level of durability and defensive system. They did well, but it was a natural end for them.
Yeah.
And a natural progression for us as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'd look to you, Leon.
I was a bit more nervous than you guys, actually, because we had this deficiency from set pieces, haven't we? And they did seem to win about 20 corners in that game. To our one or two, I don't know how many corners we had. So I was always worried maybe something might go wrong at a set piece, because their set pieces did seem dangerous, like when for that friendly game a few months ago in Cardiff. But it seemed like we dealt with the threat of their set pieces a lot better than we have been defending set pieces of late. So that was a really good sign. Another clean sheet, two clean sheets in a row. Going into this game with Belgium, the defence should be full of confidence. But I don't know. I was quite on edge, I've got to say. I kind of when we scored, I kind of exploded with relief more than anything. I mean, I always did think we would have too much for them in the end. But I mean, it was 75 minutes, so we were getting towards the closing stages there, and I expected to beat them. That was the thing. So there was perhaps some nervousness there that we weren't going to, kind of reach our potential, because it would have been a huge disappointment. I mean, as much as we're talking about it being a great achievement that we've reached the quarterfinals, when you've got a round of 16 game against Northern Ireland, you're going to be disappointed if you go out to them, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what I would say, I think part of my confidence is I've just been so impressed with Chris Coleman throughout the entire tournament. There was no way he was going to make an error in this game. He was just so assured. He spoke so well, and clearly everyone had complete faith in what they've been told to do.
Yeah, they appear, we've said this all the way through qualifying, they appear a very happy camp. They're very unified. They're willing to go the extra mile. You know, they're always doing clips of, you know, final whistle goes if Wales have won. Bale does his big roar. And they want to be here, and they're loving every minute of it. And you have to give the coach credit for keeping that going. Often when tournaments, you know, teams sort of fall out of tournaments on the back of, you know, acrimony and recriminations and bust-ups and all the rest of it, there's almost always a tournament. A couple of teams go home arguing amongst each other. So clearly, you know, cabin fever can affect squads, but doesn't appear to be affecting us in any way.
Yeah, the only hint of a bust-up I've kind of seen is James Collins's death stare as Ashley Williams was shouting, "I'm fine." At that point, I honestly thought he was going to run on and, like, judo throw Ashley Williams just to completely dislocate his shoulder. But, I completely agree. It's been mega, mega happy.
Collins has previous in dislocating Welsh defenders' shoulders as well.
Yeah.
In the form of James Chester. So, you know, careful what you wish for.
It's just lovely.
But Collins was, I mean, so pumped. I mean, Collins was ready to come on, and just, you could see him thinking, no, you know, I need to get on, and Coleman holding him back or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been critical of James Collins, like his performance and their other issues in the past. But I felt a little bit sorry for him because quite possibly he might not make the World Cup. I mean, I hope he's still around. I really do hope he does carry on. But it's unlikely he's going to play a game. Like, if he was going to come in for one game, it might have been the Northern Ireland game, given their kind of aerial direct approach. I can't imagine he'd come in against Belgium. That would be a selection from beyond any kind of realms of belief, yeah, really. But
if let's say Belgium bring on Fellaini late,
yeah,
we're 1-0 ahead. 82 minutes, Wilmots throws on Fellaini. Fellaini's been off the bench for Belgium's game so far. Does Colin consider bringing Collins on then?
Oh, absolutely. I think he should. I mean, I really, really wanted to see Coleman bring Collins on against England. I thought that was a huge mistake not to do that. But yeah, certainly. But I mean, he's not going to start a game. James Chester was absolutely phenomenal against Northern Ireland, I thought.
And Chris Wath made a point in a write up after the game where he was talking about. I mean, clearly Chester was, I think, most people's man of the match. I think Bale officially got it, but that's more about the sponsors wanting to get close to him after the game, isn't it? But Chester, I think, was most people's man of the match. He's having a terrific tournament. And Chris Latham sort of pointed out that actually he's beginning to start attacks as well. He's beginning to feed the ball into Joe Allen. And I honestly think that, give it time, you know, whether Ashley Williams stays around for another campaign or what, I don't know, because he has hinted that he hasn't got a huge amount of time left for Wales. And I do have this theory that because he came into the pro game late, you know, he was only beginning to earn really big bucks relatively late on. So if he's looking to maximise his earning potential with what's left of his career, I can see him stepping down from Wales soon. He's already got over 60 caps, so he's had
a
great
career. That would be really, really sad.
And I think it would be, but it's not Collins replacing Williams, it's Chester replacing Williams, and Collins then comes in. And I think Chester, through this tournament, is being, whether groomed is the right word, whether he's just taking it on himself, he is beginning to be that middle of three sweeper type role, certainly in an offensive way. And that's really encouraging, because without Williams, for a long, long time, we are not the team, anywhere near the team that we can be. For all of the Bales and the Ramseys, he is crucial to us. I think Chester is beginning to just kind of evolve into that role that Ash has been playing for a while.
I think this is a guy who well and truly understands he's in the shop window, because
exactly
the way he's kind of bringing the ball out of defence. And I mean, and I guess against a team that had a couple of West Brom defenders, this isn't a Tony Pulis guy, clearly. I think he was aware of this around Christmas time.
But he
will surely move to a different club, and a better club, I think, than West Brom. But yeah, he's been absolutely incredible, brilliant.
It's good age as well for a centre back. What is he, 25? So you'd think he would have a decade in him and get even better at reading the game. Centre backs tend to be at their peak in their early 30s, tend to sort of peak a bit later than other outfield players. So maybe we'll see James Chester at his absolute best in about 6 or 7 years' time.
And as a, he seems to really enjoy playing for Wales as well. Seems really relaxed, really chilled. There's a great clip on FAW's YouTube channel with him and Neil Taylor, and they're discussing The Sopranos. It's one of those typical sort of questions that gets asked of sort of footballers and sort of celebrities, and one of the questions is, there's stuff like earliest footballing memories and what age were you when you first started playing, and one of the questions is, what's your favourite box set? And he talks about Sopranos. Massive spoiler alert, if you've never seen the end of Sopranos, it's that they give it away completely. It's dreadful, but anyway, they're just talking about it, and it's kind of funny just how chilled and just how relaxed they are just with each other, with answering these kind of fairly ridiculous questions, you know, in the middle of this sort of huge tournament. And you just see, nothing seems to faze him. And he was like that right from day one. Albeit he had Danny Gabaldon alongside him for his debut, rolling back the years with a vintage Gabaldon performance. But that's been something I think is really, you know, for all of the, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, let's take each game as it comes, as Coleman is saying, and as we have to do with the tournament. That World Cup campaign, we are looking really, really well prepared and ready for it. And that is, I said this on the podcast the other day, that is now our group. Usually they're Germany's groups, they're Italy's groups, they're Spain's groups, they're Belgium's groups. That is our group. It's not Austria's, it's not Ireland's, not based off this tournament.
No.
It was never Serbia's. That is our group. And I know we were first seeds, But even if we were first seeds, we snuck in there. On maybe, yeah, you know, a lot of people argued it was just a sort of a technicality, but you know, you either you are or you're not. We are, so you know, we're there to be shot down. But even if there was a Croatia or a Belgium again, you'd still go, it's kind of their group, and we're maybe in with a shout, but we're going to be competing for runner-up.
Yeah. And I think from an Austria point of view, it may well be that this Austria team has peaked already, peaked during qualifying. They were brilliant during qualifying, dropped 2 points. They didn't lose a game, beat Russia at home and away, beat Sweden 4-1 away. They get to the tournament, the pressure's on against Hungary, team they're expected to beat, and they just sort of implode, really. And they don't seem good at dealing with that extra expectation. And, you know, they'll be kind of expected to beat us in Vienna in October. But, I mean, if we... there's nothing to be scared of with this Austrian team at all. If we can start off with... Is it Moldova at home for this game?
Yeah.
A win there, something away in Vienna, then we're kind of, you know, we're kind of on the road to the World Cup, I think, you know.
I remember the qualifying for Euro 96. I'm never going to be
in Austria. We should be confident of getting to Russia in 2 years' time.
I'll never be that confident with Moldova and Georgia in the group. Not for my teenage years.
Unfinished business.
The two teams that destroyed Welsh football in the 90s.
We're arguably are getting ahead of ourselves now. Anything else to say on Northern Ireland?
Not really, no. No.
Came along, dealt with it.
I think the important thing is just that we won the game. You know, we can kind of analyse the performance, and plenty of people in the media have and said it was a poor game. You know, it wasn't a high quality game, you got to say that. But we won.
Exactly.
It's about getting through. England have never won a knockout game at the European Championships. We have in our first one. It's about winning the game and getting through to the next round, and we did enough to do that, and that's really all that matters in the end.
And I think it's good as well that we did it in the 90 minutes. We didn't go to extra time, which brings with it all kinds of concerns about injury and fitness and that kind of thing as well. So yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, it hasn't been overly grueling for us so far. I guess psychologically the England defeat could have played a part, but clearly it didn't. Russia, for all the kind of exhilarating play we did, it's easier to be exhilarating and win 3-0. We didn't have to kind of really dig in. There wasn't kind of, what I'm kind of hinting at is there's not kind of physical fatigue, and there's not really mental fatigue either, because we haven't sort of been through the mill with a penalty shootout and so on. So it's just, I mean, it's almost perfect.
We also don't have baggage and pressure on us in a way that other squads do. Other teams turn up for these tournaments with a massive expectation on them, either as the country that they are, like England, even if the players themselves haven't really been through it or done it, or like Spain, where you turn up and you've won the previous two tournaments and you've got a huge amount of expectation, or Germany, who've always got this expectation from both their reputation and their past performances. We're incredibly lucky in the sense no one really expects anything off us, and the Welsh public aren't demanding anything off this team, because we've never been here before. We've got no expectations of this kind of thing, so we're not essentially putting that kind of pressure on them. And I think in a way that can only help you.
Well, it's brilliant, because actually the only expectation that is from within the group.
Yeah,
they're super motivated, and there's kind of a few, particularly Bale is like a very high profile winner of the biggest club competition in the world twice, so he expects to do well, and he brings everyone with him. So yeah, it's truly outstanding what's happening.
There was a really interesting point made in one of his interviews. I can't remember if it was in print or if it was a you know, an interview for TV or something, where he said a couple of other players have come up to him and asked how to deal with pressure. And I thought that was sort of fascinating, because he doesn't in one respect, that's, you know, is he kind of betraying a sort of a confidence there? Obviously, he didn't name any players, and you wouldn't expect him to, but, you know, he doesn't need to sort of say that. But I think it's kind of just reinforcing, I think what it does, it serves to reinforce how confident and just kind of sort of settled in himself, comfortable in himself, he is. And yeah, I've won these competitions. I play for the biggest club in the world. I play alongside some of the biggest players in the world. And yeah, and I'm still me and I'm still normal. And it doesn't have to be that big a deal. And there was even an interview this week I read where they were asking about the dark days in Madrid. And he kind of went, no, there were never dark days. You know, I wanted to play better.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's just taking all the heat out of all of this and kind of going, I just turn up, I play my game, this is who I am. And I think that must have such a relaxing and empowering impact on the other players.
Were the dark days when he first won the Champions League with them and then also scored that winning goal in the Copa del Rey?
Yeah.
Those dark days.
Yeah.
You know, you can see through what the media's game are, you know. But then, you know, Real Madrid, you deal with it all the time.
Zidane was booed at Madrid when he was a player.
Yeah.
So right, it's normal.
Yeah. So, okay, we get past Northern Ireland and we all, most of us, I guess, tune in to watch Hungary Belgium to see who we're going to play then on Friday. And I think it's fair to say Belgium, attacking-wise, were pretty exhilarating. Yeah. I mean, they were good and they cut them to ribbons. But Hungary also had chances. And I think...
Yeah.
John Chapman, who we've spoken to, you know, in the qualifying campaign, you know, he's come out and said this himself. You know, defensively, they're not quite there. They will allow teams to create chances. And I think for me, I was just kind of intrigued as to whether Hungary have got the attacking talent that we have, or have we got more? And I concluded that we have better attackers. We have obviously one of the best, if not the best, attacker in the tournament. And I think we can get the ball to him quicker and more efficiently. So it's about whether we can get between, we can get either side of their midfielders, and we can get in that space between midfield and defence. And I think we can because we've proven we've done it before. But they did look good going forward. Anyway,
we could definitely damage them if they defend the way they did against Hungary. Hungary had a lot of possession, had a lot of half chances, not exactly clear cut chances. For the first 50-55 minutes, the game was fairly even. Then Belgium step it up, or Hazard basically stepped it up, which he doesn't always do. And then, you know, I said earlier in the tournament, I called them flat track bullies. They're the type of team then that will put a three or four on a broken and defeated team that's out of its depth, like they did a few times in the qualifiers against teams other than us. But then there's other times they're put under a lot of pressure. First half of the qualifying campaign, they weren't performing particularly well at all. You know, if they give us the sort of opportunities, then we can hurt them in a way Hungary couldn't. We just have to make sure we do. They will still have more of the ball, more possession, but that could actually play into our hands.
What do you reckon, Leanne? Did you watch the game?
Yeah, I did. Hungary had really good chances, actually, I thought. I was surprised how open the game was. It was great to watch because it was quite end to end. And yeah, Belgium really put some good moves together, but Hungary played it a lot more open than I would expect us to play. That's for sure. Yeah, Hungary have been great to watch. I saw their game live against Austria and I really liked the way that they committed people forward in attack, and it's quite unusual for an underdog to sort of play that more attacking game, really. It'll be cagey, yeah. I think might well be only one goal in it. Maybe go to penalties, which would be quite exciting. It'd be great to, you know, get that proper tournament feel by
see what we've been missing out on all these years.
The penalty shootout. Vermaelen's out suspended, isn't he? So they'll have to rejig their defence.
Yeah.
Which I guess means probably Vertonghen going inside to centre back, and they'll bring in. Lukaku, the other Lukaku, to play left back, who I haven't seen play, but apparently he's very good going forward, but not quite so strong running back towards his own goal, which means maybe sort of put Bale on the right and attack him. I don't know what Wilmots is thinking, but they're going into this game without arguably their two first choice centre backs because Kompany was injured before the tournament anyway, and then Vermaelen's out suspended. So
yeah.
I would expect us to have chances to score.
I hope he scored. He played when Kompany was out last year, in June in the game in Cardiff.
Yeah,
he brought in
the last two times. I think he was out. Was he out when we played in Belgium as well?
I think he might have been in the Cardiff game. He brought in Jason Denayer.
That's right.
Who had a really good game actually, but I think they can all play full back or centre back. It seems so. I don't really think in some respects it sort of matters. But I think if you pull Vertonghen in, they attack a lot through Vertonghen down the left, and I think that actually probably gives maybe Bale a little bit more license. I don't know. So certainly, you know, we'd be thinking going into this game, or you know, we're without Chester, we're going to bring somebody in. As much as we'd have confidence in Collins, you don't want to be making those changes unless you have to. So I think the same thing applies to them. Yeah. And he seemed to finally, Will Motts, although I'm never too certain whether it's kind of as much by accident or his design, he did seem to be able to get a lot out of Hazard and De Bruyne in that game. But Hungary were just leaving so much space in the same way Russia were against us. The quality players just exploit it and make use of it. So, I don't know, I think it's going to be a great game. It's going to be, you know, again, it's the champagne, it's the 8 o'clock evening fixture. Eyes of Europe and further afield are going to be on us. Brilliant, really.
Yeah.
I think it's a shame we're kind of so familiar with them as opposition. Four times in 4 years.
Yeah, no, it is.
That takes a little bit of the gloss off it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I'd rather be playing, I mean, you know, maybe this is to come, but like Portugal, we haven't played for years, have we? France, I don't think we've played France since 1982 or something. We're going to have to get to the final to play France, and they will too, obviously. But, it's a bit sort of bit disappointed Spain went out because I was thinking it'd be great to play Spain for the first time since 85 and that Mark Hughes goal, I think. And Belgium, yeah, we seem to play Belgium all the time. But at the same time, we actually have a decent historical record against Belgium. We can all recall several victories over Belgium. We haven't got any victories over Serbia. We haven't got any victories over Sweden. These teams might not be as good as Belgium right now, but honestly, I'm feeling more confident playing Belgium just because we actually occasionally beat them. We never beat Sweden, we never beat Serbia or Croatia. So,
or England.
That, you know, these things, I mean, people kind of, you know, say, oh, history doesn't matter, but I think it seems to have an effect, you know, like I was saying, like Lars Lagerbeck has never lost to England. People would sort of dismiss that as, oh well, you know, he had Sweden then, he had a better team than Iceland, but he obviously knows how to set up against England and how to not get beat by them.
Yeah
I really strongly agree with what you were saying, Dan. I see Belgium as your kind of archetypal flat track bully. 100% I agree with you. They'll have more possession against us, but it's not going to be wave after wave of attack that leads to clear-cut chances. It's going to be fairly tepid possession, I think. We'll let them have that, and that'll set us up perfectly to hit them on the break. I think it's a situation where if we don't play well, the chances are we'll lose. But I feel if we play well and stick to the plan, it's our game to lose, really.
Yeah,
and that could be an extra time. I mean, look, losing Kompany and Vermaelen, I mean, these are leaders. These are proven leaders. When it gets to 65 minutes, and possibly it might even start raining, that would be incredible. What are Belgium going to do? Who's going to sort of drag them through? Hazard isn't going to do that.
He's not going to help you dig a result out, is he?
No, not at all. And I think we have. And I think Bale will. And that's probably the difference why Bale plays for Real Madrid, I think. He's got that kind of fortitude that Hazard hasn't really shown in his career. Mm. But yeah, I'm really confident in terms of kind of like the sort of the fatigue, the supporter fatigue of playing Belgium. That's one thing, but I don't think any of the Wales players will have any fatigue about facing this kind of well-stocked, a familiar names team, but not really a team that's going to scare them, I don't think.
Well, as I said, we've got bizarrely a very good record against them. You know, these things do appear to... They shouldn't factor in, but they do appear to factor in. We never beat England at football. I've got no memory of the last time we beat England in football was 1984. I was too young to remember it. I can remember at least three wins over Belgium. And at least three draws out in Belgium. Bizarrely, we've had good wins over the Germans, which no one would expect. So if there is, if Lady Luck is on our side, us playing Belgium isn't the kind of sort of death knell that maybe neutrals think it might be. There's something about us they don't like. And that's got to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, the kind of talking about who we'd like to play, I would love to play Portugal, because to me, that has been the whole narrative of the tournament, is Bale kind of officially succeeding Ronaldo as the European player, like bar none. And I think, well, look, we'll talk about this when it happens, but I'm just so excited for that.
So you're rooting for Portugal?
Yeah, yeah, I do want to see us play Portugal, because that would be such an iconic moment. And I think, I mean, I'm not going to say, oh, I told him so, or anything like that, but I've always said that this tournament will be Gareth Bale's tournament.
Yeah.
I've always said that right from the start. Mm. It's aligned perfectly. I mean, I suspected he'd win the Champions League this season as well, and it's just his whole narrative is heading towards this, and it's lovely to be part of it. It truly is.
It's going to end up with, it's going to be Bale coming third in the BBC Wales Sports Personality of the Year.
That'll be his ultimate accolade.
On that point, I actually think Poland will get through. I said earlier on, everyone talks about dark horses. No one has ever mentioned this team at all. Totally discounted. The only team that hasn't rolled over to the Germans so far. Decent qualifying. Look a pretty decent team. Okay, could have gone either way with Switzerland, but they don't care. They got through, like we did against Northern Ireland. So, fingers crossed, it could be us. But I think, I just got a feeling we will be playing Poland. I think Portugal's luck is going to run out, because they've done very little in this.
No, I completely agree with that.
Very little.
Another kind of sub-narrative of Portugal-Wales for me would be Johnny Williams comes on and comes up against Pepe. That is truly something I think any fan of football wants to see. It's just one guy who constantly wins free kicks. Well, it's two guys who constantly win free kicks in really kind of spurious ways. It's a meeting of masters with completely different physical form. This is kind of...
Is it the most fouled player of all time against the biggest fouler of all time.
Yeah, and I should go on record as saying I absolutely love Pepe. I think he's phenomenal. Yeah. But to me, that's a match made in heaven. Johnny Williams, impact sub.
But he's just a pantomime villain though, isn't he?
Pepe will be down clutching his face the second Johnny Williams touches him with his shoulder, and then that will be an iconic moment. That'll be up there with Busquets hiding from behind the fingers, or Rivaldo against Turkey. That'll be phenomenal. But yeah, it's all about, I agree, I think Poland are a big threat to Portugal, but I would love to see Portugal do it.
Poland have looked tight. They've looked well-drilled, organised. They haven't fired yet. I mean, Lewandowski hasn't scored. Milik's got one.
He's been one of their weaker players, one of their weaker performances. But we know what this guy can do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And Ronaldo was criticised for the first two games. He then eventually burst into life. I got a feeling that Lewandowski could do that for Poland. And sort of just... announce them. It could be strange that Poland would sort of announce themselves on people's radar by getting to the semi-finals, but no one's spoken about them at all. I do understand that when you're in a group with the Germans, you're always playing second field because everyone's watching what they're doing. 0-0 draw. Germany had them under pressure first 45 minutes. Poland looked comfortable in the second 45. I just think they could do it. So if, you know, if the dream came true for us, well, either way, I mean, the dream's already come true for us. The moment the second round draw fell into shape, didn't it? I mean, it was just all the list of who's nobodies, one side.
Yeah.
And then all the other, you know, supposedly big fish, the other side, knocking each other out. We're like, yeah, great, we'll have this.
And as refreshing as that has been for the tournament, I think every now and again you want some heavyweights to come up against each other. So Spain and Italy, only saw the end of the game. But that was, what I did see, I enjoyed of that. And Germany, Italy is going to be potentially a terrific game as well. And there is, and almost like a bit of a turncoat here, and sort of say that we don't deserve to be, you know, at this top table with them or anything like that at all, but because we've earned the right to be there. But when those sorts of countries clash in a tournament, then you know that adds a bit of heft, and it adds a little bit of weight to the tournament. And that's a good thing.
There's a weight of history there, whereas we're just creating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But what it also does, looking at it from another perspective, we've been saying this for a while now, it's mean that the tournament is, as we've been saying for a while, opening up. So Croatia didn't get through, didn't see that happening. Portugal, Spain have gone home. One of Germany and Italy are going to go home. And you think, hang on a minute, this is opening up very similarly to how 92 did, very similarly to how 2004 did. And somebody's going to get there. Now, whether it's...
Well, the Euros have a habit of doing
it. Or it's Iceland, or, you know, it remains to be seen, but...
Yeah, the Euros do.
Germany...
The World Cup don't.
Germany sneaking through.
Germany have a terrible record against Italy.
Beating them ever in a tournament, did they?
So I would make Italy favourites for that game. There's something about playing Italy that Germany don't like at all.
I've been impressed with Italy from what I've seen, against Ireland, where they were dreadful, but it wasn't the first choice team.
I
think if they were to beat Germany, to have knocked out Spain and Germany en route, and to beat Belgium in the group game, you'd kind of, you know, being dispassionate about it, you'd say, well, fair play, they've actually had a really good tournament, they deserve to be where they're getting.
They would be creditable runners-up, definitely.
Oh, naughty.
Now, if they were to do it, that would be extraordinary. I mean, theory, without wishing to commit ITV-type sins, but, you know, they could have done what? Belgium in the groups, Spain, Germany, France or Iceland to get to a final. If they were to do that, you couldn't begrudge any team there, because that's a beast of an absolute beast.
Speaking of Iceland, I think it would be remiss not to give them some plaudits, because they're having a terrific journey and a terrific...
They'll play stronger teams as the tournament goes on, definitely. I mean, they played... England... I mean, I said Northern Ireland brought us down... a level. England truly brought us down a level. I mean, they were just they were shambolic in beating us, I think. And all the warning signs for England were there in our game. They were It was just astonishing to see how haphazard they were against us. And I think we failed in that game. That will go down as a failure.
Absolutely, because of the reputation of their players, we showed them far too much respect, sat deep and watched them play. And then in the end thought, we may be able to grind out a draw. And we haven't been playing like that over the last couple of years. We haven't been playing so within ourselves, let's see if we can grind out the draw. And in a way, we kind of let them off the hook. However, in a funny way, had they not got the win over us, they may have forced them to step up. But it didn't. So, you know, it allowed them to continue with this, you know, easy after the vent, but Shiva after each game... has been very critical.
He's been the voice of reason.
And has been saying this team isn't looking particularly good, is not playing particularly good, is clearly not the sum of the parts. And it takes back to the podcast we did before the tournament where I bigged England up and you didn't. And you said a lack of philosophy. And it is true that after all this time, there was no particular game plan. There was no philosophy as to what Roy Hodgson was trying to do. Shearer said at the end of the game yesterday, it looked like they were making it up as they go along. And so you were proved right. I was wrong. I thought in the end their personnel, the personnel they had available would pull it off. But it hasn't happened. So in the end, what have they done? One win in injury time, one defeat, two draws. Yeah, another nothing tournament for them,
I mean,
isn't it?
What I would say is, and I'm kind of going to reverse the traditional media situation we find ourselves in. Talking about England, I'm going to refer it back to Wales because that's way more relevant. if you look at Gary Neville, the kind of, I guess it was like an assumption that this guy was a tactical genius, the premier coach of a generation. We've got Oshan Roberts, who's sort of worked diligently over years and years and years, learning his trade, and we've got a brilliantly set up team. Gary Neville for England has not been able to impact whatsoever in a serious way. Yeah, they did really well in qualifying, but the second they faced any kind of adversity or tournament conditions, which are completely different, they've completely failed. Mm. He's been an abject disaster.
Mm.
And this is a guy who's been sacked from Valencia after a couple of months, but had that kind of rampant ego to assume he'd be fine with that. Oshan Roberts wouldn't take a manager's job at a team like Valencia. Because I think,
how's he been getting these posts?
Well, I think he was best friends with Valencia's owner, I believe. But I mean, but anyway, so what we've done we've got credible coaches spearheaded by a charismatic guy who the players love. England have the complete opposite of all of that.
Yeah.
And this is what you get for it. I mean, Roy Hodgson was incredibly lucky to stay after the World Cup.
Absolutely.
Nothing's changed.
And also flattered by very, very, very weak qualifying groups, where they're able to essentially cruise through, no questions asked at all, and then nothing's asked of them, because you can turn around and say, you know, I've won 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10 makes you look really good. But the only really sterling performance they needed, the only stand-up performance they had, and the only one they needed, was the very first one when they beat Switzerland away in the opening qualifier. They win 2-0, I think it was 2-0.
Mm.
That set them up completely. The only team that could stop them winning the group, Switzerland, were now playing with a handicap.
Yeah,
they walk the group. No questions asked of them at
Every
all.
The team
and in the end, it's really harmed them because they haven't had to scrap anything out for 2 years. And I had my head in my hands after we got thumped by Sweden in a friendly. We said, well, actually, friendly results don't mean anything. Germany lost two friendlies going into this tournament. Tournament conditions are totally different, and
Italy drew Luxembourg before the last World Cup.
Did they?
I mean, they are what they are. I mean, I think it's just the game's just to keep the players ticking over, keep them fresh, keep them fit, get out of the training camp environment. Just, you know, that's all those games are. Right. England had lots of warm up games. Caught a little bit of Five Live last night after the game as well, and the phone-ins are just brilliant. I mean, just hilariously brilliant. One guy on there talking about how, forget the Premiership, they're all pampered, forget them, just pick Championship and League One players, because at least they'll have a bit of heart. And you're thinking, yeah, but they don't have any technique, because that's one of the problems, is the technique. Because Rooney in defence, I think actually, in midfield, I think he will evolve into that role, and he will be a bit more of a deep-lying midfielder. He wants to influence and win the games, but he was so pedestrian moving the ball around, and Chris Waddle was ranting and raving to how pampered they are and everything else. And I'm thinking, well, how does this work? Is Jack Wilshere pampered but Aaron Ramsey isn't? I mean, is Gareth Bale not pampered? Is Ashley Williams not pampered? It's this lowest common denominator usual analysis.
I think it changes as well, because how often do you hear this? You hear this after the last World Cup, you hear this after the Euros before, the World Cup before. It's like every 2 years, isn't it? It's like clockwork.
And I think that's the point. I think these arguments, they're so well rehearsed now that they're just easy to trot out, but I don't actually think they're getting anywhere near the
English club game is too rich and too powerful for anything to ever change.
And that's the problem. The FA,
nothing will ever change.
The FA ceded control to the clubs in the early 90s, and they're not able to influence
nothing can
tactically,
change.
Structurally, systemically within the game.
The clubs are all owned by foreigners anyway.
Well, no, exactly.
So why are they going to take the orders, foreign money, having bought these clubs with foreign players and coaches?
About how they cruise through qualifying, and then they come, or maybe it's Rich talking about this as well, and they come up against they come into a tournament and tournament conditions, and they're not used to it. I always did think, like, when we finally qualified, this is going back years and years, and you know, all our failures, but I did think when we qualified we would actually do well at the tournament, because we'd be coming from fourth seeds like we just did, or third seeds. So we would have to beat or draw against good teams, like we, you know, drew against Bosnia at home, who'd just been in the World Cup, like we took 4 points off Belgium.
Yeah.
So we've been tested on a regular basis against good teams.
I think there's something slightly more to that as well. I, in a funny way, am generally the most pessimistic around the table, but I always thought something good might happen. I'd never felt like the sword of Damocles was hanging over this squad. For me, the problem we have had, and it's been quite bizarre how we missed out so many times in the past, the monkey on our back was qualifying at all. And because no one really follows Welsh football outside of Wales, no one realised just how terribly heartbreaking these events were every 2 to 4 years for roughly about 25 years. I mean, we were almost cursed about qualifying for tournaments, the way we managed to screw it up at the end. And I remember thinking, once we finally get over this hurdle, psychologically, get this monkey off our back, I think we'll do all right. England now have their own curse. This is their curse, is the knockout stages of big tournaments. They know exactly where their psychological barrier is, because for the first, everyone said, yes, Dave, if they score early, it'd be a walk in the park. I tweeted something fairly similar. Could not see any way that Iceland would have the personnel to stop this England team. They then get the goal immediately, and I thought, well, there you are. For once, the gods are shining on them. And then they immediately concede a goal, and then they began to panic, as if, oh, this isn't supposed to happen. And you could almost think, it was almost us, you know, in the Bosnia qualifying game, thinking, oh my God, we need to win a game to qualify for a tournament for the first time since 1958. We're 2-0 down. Oh my God, here we go again. The panic setting in, of course, as it turns out, the result in Israel-Cyprus goes our way. Lady Luck shone on us. England immediately then felt, you could see them shrink and immediately feel the pressure. And then got worse, actually, as the game went on.
And looking at, and I think you're right, Richard, I think we'll look back and we'll increasingly, if not already, but certainly increasingly, look at the Ireland game against England as a failure. We almost were sort of too disciplined and too rigid in defence. We just had these banks of sort of four and five, and we couldn't get out. We did drop too deep. Iceland just kind of went a bit shock and awe. They just kind of just mobbed whoever had the ball.
And actually, the engine on the team
throughout the rule book for defending. So they were leaving players completely open.
Yeah.
And then were just kind of like, all to sort of descend on them. And it panicked England because they didn't know where to move. And because they couldn't move the ball quick enough as well. And
that's a really great point.
Whether it's a gamble or calculated.
But when they did sort of almost like turn the ball over, in other words, force the ball off an England player through sheer almost like pack numbers, they would break very quickly, or if there's no break on, just hit a long diagonal ball. And quite unashamedly, go on in England, start all over again. And England didn't really have much. They didn't really know what to do
and
to counter.
We didn't use those balls wisely.
We didn't do any of that.
Because we do that. We tend to do that quite a lot. We certainly did it a massive amount against
the personnel.
Is to change the way. And we should have done a bit more, which
is... Yeah, no, I'd agree.
Well, yeah, I think kind of what happened was Iceland played against England like as if they were playing against an EPL team. We tried to play against England as if England were an international team.
Yeah.
They're not really. They're just kind of a pretty good EPL team.
Mm.
And if you kind of try and defend, if you try and play an international game against them with our level of players, probably that's not going to work. I mean, we're not good enough to kind of be the international team that kind of dominates them for possession.
No.
And that by playing our kind of style, I think it just invited wave after wave. Whereas Iceland just sort of got in their faces. Yeah. It was kind of a Stoke from a few years ago. It was that kind of thing.
We paid them too much respect, and Iceland, by contrast, paid them almost no respect.
Yeah, it was like it was kind of like a Stoke versus Liverpool situation.
Yeah,
I think.
But this idea that England were playing at Premier League level week in, week out, they're not used to dealing with long throws. You know, defending long throws, because that's not the way that the game's played in the Premier League. I'm thinking, hello, Stoke. Stoke City have been doing this for years.
Yeah.
Gareth Bale was doing long throws for Spurs. That's nothing new.
No, exactly.
Wimbledon were doing that 20 years. There's always at least one team that specialises in these long throws into the box.
There's feeble excuses designed and trotted out to obscure the fact that actually the things they need to change in England are things that they cannot change.
Yeah, no,
they do not have the levers to pull in order to affect the change at grassroots coaching level, at academy level. And
Slaven Bilic was asked back, as I said, I know they were the team other than Wales that I would like to see do well. Croatia, because they've got a very small population, they always play in a pretty decent kit, and
counts for a lot.
Absolutely, and they're always good value for money in a tournament. And you know, how do they keep doing it? And he said, well, you know, we got a small but very competitive league and all the rest of it. In the end, what he meant to say was, without saying it, he basically said, there's no money in Croatian football. We have no choice but to play our own players. We simply can't get a checkbook out and go, we've got a deficiency, we'll import the solution. We simply just have to find kids who are good enough, and we keep doing it and keep doing it. But the league is competitive within itself, because you could say, well, Scottish football used to do that, because Celtic and Rangers snuffed out made Scottish football uncompetitive, so talent didn't come through. There's no two teams dominating Croatian football, so it's always worth playing for, and the players keep coming through, So that's how a country... So basically, that's how a small country punches above its weight. Frankly, starve it of money and resources, and they've got no choice but to train their own players. Yeah. England will never need to do that. You've got a problem in English football? Who can't you afford to buy? Only Real Madrid and Barcelona can outbid you.
Yeah.
I think the reality we live in now, and I'm kind of comfortable with this, England are going to be our bogey team, but the natural order of things is we will progress further in tournaments. The end.
Which
that's
is fine.
I'll take the odd defeat against them. Like, if we're in a group with England and Italy, that's a bit more worrying, but I mean,
but they would only be in competitive games we play them, because they wouldn't demean themselves by playing us anyway.
No, of course
not. And all the top nations do that now. They all just play each other in friendlies. France play Belgium, and France play Germany, and Germany play Holland, and Holland play Italy, and Italy play England.
So once again, they're commercial. Brazil, they're commercial. They're revenue driving.
Yeah.
Exercises.
Yeah. Maybe they need to play Iceland more often.
Which
or the Finlands, or the Norways, or Northern Ireland.
No, I think you're right then. Yeah, England have to justify the money for Wembley, so they need to play friendlies against big teams to fill up an 80,000 stadium. It's like why Wales play a fourth rugby international every autumn and no one else does.
Yeah.
It's a game that exists purely for financial reasons.
Are Austrians enjoying England's demise last night every bit as much as I think the rest of Europe?
Well, it reflects quite well on them, because they lost to Iceland 2-1 in the last minute as they were pushing forward for a goal. And nobody really saw it coming. Watching on the TV, the three pundits predicted easy wins for England. But it was just great, you know. Especially with the political climate at the moment, people are quite enjoying watching England fail.
Yeah, I think so. And I think there was a really great piece of karma. I think it was the game against Slovakia where the lead commentator, I can't remember who it was, the lead commentator referred, I think, to Ashley Williams saying, of course, born in England. And the commentator then said, as so many of the Welsh team are. In our first choice team, there's three people who were born in England. That's a small amount of players. Then what follows is we see our supposedly English-dominated squad going absolutely nuts watching Iceland knocking England out. And that's just amazing. And that I think that's kind of... That just shows, irrespective of where our players are born, and most of them are born in Wales, they are all 100% Welsh. And a commentator can sort of say, oh... can make really snide, unhelpful references, but it means nothing.
Is it as if the commentators would ever do enough research on us or our squad to actually know what they're on about? We simply are an afterthought. It simply doesn't matter. They're not supposed to be talking about us. This isn't about us. This is about them.
And judging by the clip of the players celebrating Iceland's win and not England's defeat, the English-born ones seem to be getting
a lot out of that
clip just kills that.
A few years ago, I remember Robbie Savage is always on the radio, and some guy rang him up, and it was on about international football. And he says to this guy, he says, He says, well, I would know. I played international football. He goes, well, yeah, you did for Wales. And he says, what do you mean by that? He goes, well, you're not good enough to get in the England team. He goes, well, I'm from Wrexham. And I remember thinking, yeah, we just simply don't exist on the radar, do we?
Although, in making that point, you've portrayed Robbie Savage in a positive light. And that is one of the rules.
There
of
we
this.
Are, but that's the reality.
You can go and sit on the naughty step for a bit.
But I would kind of like qualify my point by saying, on a true level, I do not care what any of the media say.
No.
And I don't think the players do either. I think,
of course they
don't. And our fans don't care either. I think, yes, it's annoying to listen to it. That's a different problem as to why we have to listen to it. Our team is 100% committed, and you couldn't ask for any more.
But it was ridiculous today. I mean, you know, we pointed out on Twitter that Chris Gunter was asked by BBC Wales to have to justify and explain those celebrations.
But I think fair play to him. He could have completely caved in. He was. I mean, I was really happy with Gunter and Neil Taylor's response. I think both of them were quite a little bit aloof to it, and it kind of, you know, just. It gave a couple of platitudes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was ludicrous they were asked that question. It was absolute
crazy
nonsense. And what I would say, I would encourage everyone who follows our Twitter, when you see stuff like this happen, tweet us and we'll retweet it. Because I think it's kind of important that people like BBC Wales understand that fans of Welsh football, Welsh people, don't find this acceptable. And I think if we can't say it now in a major tournament, we never will be able to. So
I'd just like to say... Under the Wales Online article about this, there's about 40 odd comments, probably more now, and a lot of them are saying, this is disrespectful, this is, you know, England would be supporting us if it was the other way around, all this kind of nonsense. And it just really made me think of the rugby game a few years ago when Wales beat England, and you had this picture of... Jonathan Davis laughing next to like a stony-faced Clive Woodward and Jeremy Guscott. Where were the people saying Jonathan Davis is being disrespectful laughing at England then? I don't remember anyone saying this. There seems to be this strange double standard in football that like we should kind of know our place. Yeah, we're just little Wales, the England B team or whatever. How dare we celebrate an England defeat? I just think it's bullshit.
Well said.
Yeah, and what I would say, I also saw that Wales Online article. Out of those 40 comments, I imagine 39 came from Jason Mohammed's IP address. But
there was another one in The Guardian, wasn't it? 24 teams, with teams like Wales and Iceland in it. This could turn into like a boar fest.
That
or
was
something
that was
like
Paul
that.
Wilson. Paul Wilson of The Guardian. He's on Twitter.
Terrible article.
Yeah, I think the Barry Horns really successfully called him out on that, and that kind of went a bit crazy on Twitter. So that was phenomenal.
Yeah. So there's 24 teams in the tournament, but he chose Iceland and us. He didn't choose Northern Ireland, I noticed.
Sid Lowe's been good. Sid Lowe has written a couple of really good pieces, actually, just kind of balance it slightly for the Guardian.
And Gabriele Marcotti.
Yeah.
He's been good. And I made a point, and I did reply to him, and he acknowledged it as well, fair play to him. I sort of said that, you know, usually the likes of them are talking about Italy and Germany and England, that's fine. When they turn their attention to other nations, like Wilson, then they just trot out the old clichés. It's poorly researched. They're just finding information that's already kind of out there.
Exactly.
Stuff we've already heard all before. Whereas Marcotti, in a couple of pieces, is able to actually reveal stuff that I didn't know about or was kind of like, all right, okay, that's interesting. Put it in a different context. So they're actually, and Sid Lowe's done it as well.
Yeah.
They're actually making an effort to go, okay, what is going on here? What is behind the scenes? What is the chronology of this? Where and when did this start? You know, what are the different factors? Rather than just go, yeah, Bale's been amazing, and he's kind of ably supported by these 10 other guys, which just basically tends to be the message that's trotted out.
It's just a completely different approach to journalism. I mean, Sid Lowe covers La Liga for The Guardian, so this is a guy who isn't kind of spellbound by the EPL, clearly.
And that's a lot of it. And I think that goes back to, and I was going to make this point, one of the other reasons why they will never begin to recognise that they haven't got the levers to change what they need to change fundamentally is by recognising that fundamentally criticises the EPL. Sky aren't going to do that. BBC and ITV aren't going to do that. And so it will just be the elephant in the room, and they'll just try to find... I mean, like Chris Waddle was going on about how all the players are wearing headphones. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They don't communicate with each other. And you kind of go, well, the level
of... Yeah, I mean, all the other...
Inquiry that goes into this.
They're all well-paid, wearing headphones. Exactly. And wearing, you know, expensive suits.
And the Italians and the Spanish. And it was all the players.
And the Germans. And they are consistently good in all tournaments.
Although the height of media crassness was at half-time. We were talking about this off-air. Was Mark Pugac, I think, inquiring as to whether Joe Hart should keep his place for the quarter-final when they were 2-1 down.
Yeah, he made the quarter-finals on the next tournament.
Yeah. It was that sort of moment where you thought, did he just say that? Yeah. And I don't have the luxury of Sky Plus to be able to just go back and double-check, but you don't have to. You just go on the internet within seconds of saying.
But it's forgivable for the people, for the pundits and everyone just assuming, as I did myself, that England would just sort of cruise through. It's unprofessional of them, but it's kind of to be expected. But when you realise that elements of the England coaching team don't really appear to have taken this game as seriously as they should have done by scouting out and understanding how Iceland play and what they do and what players they've got and what they can do from their qualifying record, which is very good.
Because you were saying that Hodgson apparently went off sightseeing instead of watching.
He was on the River Seine, yeah, sightseeing, whilst Iceland were playing Austria in their final game. Now,
that's going to go down as a McLaren umbrella moment.
Well, absolutely.
It?
So, are they there partly on holiday?
That's so interesting.
He's not there for work purposes.
That's reminded me. Yeah, I read an article prior to the England game that brought into focus Roy Hodgson and Chris Coleman's shared history. And when Hodgson arrived at Blackburn, he was this kind of really like metropolitan, kind of sophisticated, well-travelled guy. And he looked at Chris Coleman and was like, no, absolutely not. Just based on his personality and kind of his status in the dressing room. He got rid of him. Mm. And now this is the guy who, like you said, went on a sightseeing trip during a tournament. So yeah, I mean, and Chris Coleman has just stayed focused and professional. So perhaps Coleman owes him a thanks, maybe. But that's probably being a bit generous to Roy Hodgson.
Is that the difference, why the Germans don't have these problems in tournaments? They've just always been far, far more professional about the whole thing. They just go and say, well, we'll do the sightseeing
after we've won it.
Yeah. Well, that's when we'll go and do it.
Do you want to know a stat on this? Like, since 1966 and England winning the World Cup, England have won 6 tournament knockout games. Germany have won 6 trophies.
Yeah.
If I wasn't finding it just so entertaining to see England knocked out before us, and I am 100% enjoying that, legitimately as well, it's perfectly acceptable to be happy that your rivals are knocked out before you. To suggest otherwise is bizarre and sinister. But I did hear something. The favourite for the England job is Gareth Southgate. He's been muted that Glenn Hoddle will be his assistant. I truly hope that happens, because that will be the most entertaining car crash of all time. I mean, Glenn Hoddle is a guy who is too arrogant to get on with the players 20 years ago, let alone now, when probably a lot of them will have a vague understanding of who he is.
I mean,
then you've got Gareth Southgate, who is kind of on a Gary Neville level of exposed as a fraud, really, I would say.
That just seems a bizarre suggestion. But then they always play a safety FA. I mean, that's, you know, they've done that for years. They did it. They couldn't keep up with Venables. They never trusted Clough. That's just how it's always been done.
Because I was going to say, well, in the end, you know, they sold their soul in the early 90s. In the end, they sold control of their game. But you're right, it predates big money in English football. Back in the 70s, the FA had a habit of not picking the right people at the right time. For whatever reason. I mean, with Clough, it was because he wasn't a yes man. He wouldn't do what they wanted him to.
There's nothing wrong, as you were saying, Rich, to take some pleasure in the schadenfreude then of your rival struggling. There's more glee involved when you just... It's the media, just how crass they've been. And I kind of feel sorry for some of the fans, because they, to be fair, England travel in their numbers. Most of them are fine. There's some few boneheads, yeah, clearly. But nothing ever seems to sort of change.
I did meet England fans in Toulouse and in Bordeaux, and England were playing in those cities. We were just there for the football and to watch games in the stadiums and in the fan zones and in pubs. And they were great. They were all great. And I sort of do feel like England fans perhaps deserve better from their FA, better leadership.
And I feel sorry for the
charge, a better football media.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's the media for me. It's just unbearable at times, isn't
it?
Well,
yeah, I agree with that. But I still kind of feel like, what is the point of sport if you're not going to be happy when you're... I don't feel sorry for England fans. I mean, I feel sorry for English people when something bad happens in the economy or that kind of stuff. But when they lose at sport, it's perfectly legitimate to enjoy that. I mean, do Dutch people sit around feeling sorry for German fans? I mean, when they lose, I can't possibly imagine that would be the case. It's just lovely to see a team, particularly if you're a smaller team or a smaller nation.
Yeah, that's ultimately...
That's great. I mean,
ultimately, we in sport, possibly with the exception of the rugby union, we're too small. We don't show up as one of their rivals. So they don't think, oh, God, we've got Wales. Oh, I can't wait to beat the Taffs. In the end, they're in football, although their record in tournaments doesn't justify this, but in their sense of themselves, it's France, it's Germany, it's Italy, Spain, they're their rival. So they don't even think about us until then, as an afterthought, they get knocked out. So they'll perfectly reasonably then associate themselves with another British team, where the only one left, and it comes in. My attitude is, does the media expect people from North London who support Arsenal, if Arsenal get knocked out, do they turn around and default to supporting Spurs?
Exactly.
Never in a million years. That's not the way sport works. And your closest rival is your fiercest rival.
You wouldn't want it to work like that,
exactly,
would you? Otherwise people would be sitting there in complete silence, basically, occasionally clapping.
Prawn sandwich brigade.
Well, yeah. Or clapping both teams scoring. I mean, that isn't what makes sport so compelling. I mean, and it's just...
Certainly not local derbies.
It's flabbergasting. And one thing, again, kind of coming back to this, is it's been historically incredibly easy for England fans to say, oh, we'd support you. Well, yes, because you knew we weren't going to be there. So, yeah, of course we'd support you if you got to the semi-final. Well, we got nowhere near qualifying, as they would well have known at the time. This kind of situation will be sorely tested now. And there are not going to be pubs, despite what EastEnders say in the episode tonight, that will have Welsh bunting up, well, the Welsh dragon bunting up in North London. Of course that's not going to happen. That's absurd. And that's great. I wouldn't expect or want there to be either. This is sport. I should take it in the context of what it is.
Absolutely. Okay. We've rattled on for long enough. Do you want to do predictions?
Predictions.
We're assuming we're going to beat Belgium.
As I said, I've always been fairly kind of pessimistic. Cautious, I think, is a better term. Cautious. But we've come this far. Cautious.
Don't leave
that. We'll win on penalties.
Okay. Win on penalties. What do you reckon, Leon?
Right. We've been in two quarterfinals before where we were actually quite unlucky. In 58, we were without our best player because John Charles had got kicked out of it in the previous game. And in 76, some dodgy refereeing decisions went against us. So I'm thinking third time lucky.
Nice.
Third quarter final. We'll win on penalties.
I'd forgotten about the 76 Yugoslavia thing. So I'd forgotten the third time lucky thing.
Yeah.
But,
Jack and Rich.
Okay, I'm not a religious guy at all.
We're supposed to have a Damascene conversion.
But I, as I've said, I kind of feel like this has already been written. So there we go. Make of that what you will.
Okay.
Go back and
listen
to previous podcasts.
Okay. Yes, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Joe, I was going to say penalties actually as well. But since you've both said it, I will say that we will, I think we'll win 1-0 then. And we'll do it in 90 minutes.
Yeah. What was the score, Rich?
I'll tell you what, I think it might be an extra time, I think, or it could be a very, very late goal, but we're going to win. We'll be fine. We march onwards.
March onwards.
Oh my word.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you, gents. We might be. We're going to see if we can try and catch up with John Chapman, the Belgian football journalist. So, not sure if that's going to happen or not via Skype. But, yeah, we'll get this up as soon as we can. And safe trip to Lille, for those who are listening. And just keep living the dream.
Exactly.
Cheers, gents.
Cheers. Thank you. Enjoy the game. Nice. Speak soon.